Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region is the region's federally designated economic development organization, providing services and resources to the region's businesses and municipalities. Find out more at sector, that's SECTER.org. Service Master by Mason are experts at eliminating harmful mold and mildew from your home or business. Don't let mold damage your property and cause health concerns. Call 860-455-1249. And Day Kimball Health, nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health, healthcare in motion. Learn more at daykimball.org. It's a 40-year-old human service agency in the far corner of the quiet corner. We sit down with the executive director and find out about Teague and the services it continues to provide to those in need. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. Human services and non-profit organizations are the backbone of many states in the U.S., providing essential service from cradle to grave. And depending on where you live here in Connecticut, there's hopefully one near you that can help with your unique situation. For 40 years now, an organization known as Teague has and continues to provide an array of services to those living in the very far corner of the quiet corner. And I sat down with Teague's executive director, Ann Miller, to find out about how it all started and what it is they do.
And thanks for being on the podcast. I just want to quickly explain to the listeners, because I love the way that I come across many of my stories, and I never actually share that actually with the listeners. I bumped into you at a Northeastern Connecticut Chamber event at another amazing nonprofit actually in the town of Willimantic called Click Kitchen. And, you know, we just started talking. I found out that you are the executive director of this amazing organization up here in Thompson in the far northeast corner of the state. And you very kindly agreed for, you know, us to come and chat to you because we're about to find out what Teague is all about. Just had a quick tour around. So let me hand it over to you. We've said Teague. What is Teague?
That's a great question, Brian. Thank you. Because what is Teague? It's a made-up word. It's an acronym that we really use as our title now. We are the Thompson Ecumenical Empowerment Group. We originated in this little corner of Thompson over 30 years ago. I was not here then. It was the 80s, and there was a section of Thompson where folks were really struggling. Thompson is a mill town in this area. The mills had left. People were struggling living in mill housing, and it was an area that local churches felt that they could help. So they got together, they got a diocesan grant. It was different churches that received a diocesan grant, and they went down into the area that was called Three Rows at the time and said, we'd like to teach you some parenting skills. And folks said, I don't think so. That's not the way this is going to go. So they went back to the drawing board. They came back with, I guess, several offers. This is the story I've been told. And one of them was, would you like to learn how to quilt? And they said, yeah, we think that would be cool. And they said, okay, let's make a quilt that represents the Three Rows of Thompson. And they got together and they sat around. It's a hand-quilted quilt. It hangs in our community room. And while they sat there and they hand-stitched this quilt, they talked about nutrition, budgeting, work skills, and parenting. And so it became very organic. It became an organic way for them to share what they hope would become help for these folks in improving quality of their life. And it has lasted until now. It's still going strong. It has grown, as you could see. They built a little playground called Tot Lot through that too, and created a space where they could get together and bring their children in that area. The little Tot Lot still exists. It's been improved on. And we tend to work from that very organic space. It's true grassroots. It's addressing issues as they arrive. The hardest thing for us is to put an issue down before picking another issue up. So some of my work has become, what can we really do? How much can we do on a small staff with a small budget?
We're going to be talking about the various services because it seems, looking through your website and obviously from the tour as well, there's very little you don't don't seem to touch or do, which is incredible. You will actually, not yourself, but the organisation will be 40 years old next year, because it's 1985, if my research was correct. So 40 years of this amazing organisation. Like we said, up in Thompson, but it is, you're not just restricted to Thompson, Woodstock, Pomfret, and also Putnam as well, areas that you serve, but you go beyond that as well. There's we won't go through the full list, but you serve a lot of towns. Before we get into all of that, as you said a little while ago in this interview, you've not been here for the complete duration. But let me put this question to you. What made you want to come and be the executive director of this organization? Because when it comes to nonprofits, they're a tough gig.
They are a tough gig. I've been very fortunate in my life. I grew up on the UConn campus, was moved out to this area, which was very different from where I grew up in high school, where my dad started Quinebaug Valley Community College. My dad was a giver. My mom is a giver. And we often worked with different populations through his work. So I was exposed to a lot. When I came out here, it was a little bit of a culture shock. Later on in my career, I became connected to Pomfret School. I was there for about 27 years. That's a private boarding and day school where my life was very rich and worked with some wonderful, wonderful adults and teenagers. I just was very blessed to do that. I'd been there for a long time. I started thinking, what's left between now and retirement? And, you know, working in a social service agency can become very tiring, and working with high school students can also become, it can stretch you. And so I just happened onto this job. I walked in and it was like I was breathing fresh air. I don't know if you felt it today, but this little agency is the little engine that could. I always believed I could make a difference when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s. You get a little bit, you get a little shot down with that when you become an adult. I walked in here and I thought, I think I can make a difference. I think I can work alongside these folks making a difference. And I considered it a privilege for the last 9 years to have been here. I came in as the associate director. The director left in less than a year, and she asked, would I consider taking her place? That seemed huge to me. Did I have the skills? That's a huge responsibility. But I knew that with my board that I had at that time and with the staff that I had, that I could try. And I did.
Talk to us about your staff, because although it is a small agency, it is small but mighty. And I said, we'll be getting into more of the services, the incredible array of services that you offer every day of the year, year after year. But let's talk about the staff, because they are the unsung heroes, and not just the staff, but the volunteers. And we'll talk about those in a moment. But talk to us about some of the staff, because they have got rich and varied backgrounds as well.
They do. And they don't always come to us with a social service degree. What they come to us with is a passion to make the world better for someone else. And I think that everybody you talk to today could have given you a story or a reason that they wanted to make the world better for someone else. And I try to let my staff do what they do best. I'm not a top-down leader. I often will ask their permission and their opinion, and they often know a better way to do it. And I think it's really important to listen to these folks who are on the ground doing that work, and to occasionally do that work myself when I can. They are creative, and I think you have to be very careful when you talk about creativity in a social service agency, because someone might say, are you being financially creative? Well, you have to be a little bit financially creative, right? The beauty of a social service agency that is grassroots, as we are, is that we only are funded about a third from state and federal funding. The rest of that money that we bring in, we can use to react and act in the best ways possible to help those we serve. My staff does that every day, and they are always free to come in and say, I know a better way to do this. And we do grow and we move with things. And sometimes things don't work. Many of my staff members, we might hold something that is an activity or an offering, and nobody's there that first time. And maybe they don't come in the second time we hold it. I think most people would give up and say, well, this wasn't the right thing. They stay in there until all of a sudden people start to come in and to join us. And all of our programs are very full now. We have wait lists for some of them. What keeps me up at night is, how do I keep funding this? How do I keep funding it?
I was going to say, I mean, in a way, it's good that you've got wait lists, but also it's a bad thing as well, because it means that the need is just increasing. And like you said, organizations like Teague are the ones that have to fill the gaps where, and we're not knocking the state, but where the state cannot fulfill everything, it's down to organizations like you, as I say, to plug those gaps and keep plugging those gaps, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, things come so clear to you. I think I shared with you, maybe I didn't share with you, but I will be retiring at the end of November. I will not be retiring from serving this area. I still have some ideas in mind. We're talking about a CLIC in the northeast corner, and Lee Duffy down at CLIC is very anxious to work with us on that. If we don't fill the gaps, no one will. There is no one there. For some of our CAP agencies, people are stretched so thin there that they don't have the time or the capacity. We're filling the gaps on the ground. We're keeping people warm and fed while they're waiting for housing. We're checking in on the homeless. We're working to see that they understand the systems that are going to serve them. And in some cases, we're advocating for families who don't have a voice to advocate on their own. If the Teagues weren't there, and the state knows this, and they are very grateful to the Teagues, and they are working to try to keep us funded, if we aren't there, there's going to be a huge gap missing in what people need.
I think I can say this without sounding dramatic. Organizations like yours save people's lives.
They do. They do. We just saved a life, I think. A story I shared with you earlier, I won't share too many details of that story, but it was someone who did not have a voice to advocate for herself medically. We don't do medicine. That's not what we do. But we realized in working with her that she needed a lift. And we today, as of this morning, and that's why I was late coming back to see you, have been able to get medication for her that will keep her alive. That's what her doctor said. It will keep her alive. And she couldn't express that on her own. And she knows that. So she came to us. So yeah, we are saving lives.
As you said, we won't go into the details because obviously there is HIPAA and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's okay to say that this lady is actually a volunteer as well.
She is.
Let's talk about volunteers in general, because that's another big part of how this organization continues to do its work. Talk to us about the volunteers.
So you actually met four volunteers in just your, you actually didn't meet one, but the others I think you met as you walked through. This woman who is here today and very happy today. She's very relieved. She comes in and straightens our kitchen for us. We have multiple people using our approved kitchen. And whereas that kitchen does get cleaned up, it doesn't always get sorted correctly. So it's hard to find a dish or a spoon or a knife. And so she comes in once a week and does that with us. She also is part of our Sassy Soup program, which delivers soup to seniors on Fridays. The Pomfret School students that we worked with cooked all of our soup with us this year. And she puts the soup into the containers after it's cool and puts it into the freezer. We had another volunteer that you met who works 5 days a week doing inventory in our markets. He is very valuable. He's very happy to be here as long as, and we are also happy to have him here. You met Uncle Eric, who does, he is not only a board member, but he is here almost every day of the week coming in doing our building maintenance. We don't have a maintenance crew. We keep up our building on our own, and we needed someone with some expertise. And then the one volunteer you didn't meet comes in and does organizational things in the back. She's cleared to do some things to organize some of our paperwork and our supplies.
Let's talk a little bit about the programs and services. There are a huge amount. We can't touch upon all of them. It would be an entire series of podcasts, and you know that's not necessarily a bad thing. But let's touch upon some of these services that you do. Youth services, huge thing, because of course, you know, we're constantly reading, and just fairly recently, there was the Dalio report that was released saying that in the state, connected youth. Talk to us about how important your youth services are.
High concentration of those youth in the northeast corner. If you look at that map, it's shocking. We are the youth service bureau for Pomfret, Thompson, Woodstock, and Putnam. That's the bulk of the work we do in Putnam. We are working with youth that I think many people would understand the word disenfranchised. These youth are not connected to any institutions. They're not connected to schools in many cases. Adults are not in their life. Their families may have struggled. The youth work that we do starts at birth with our hand-in-hand program. Some of our hand-in-hand moms are with us before birth, and we try to nurture that connection through mentoring and through very intensive work until that child enters school. And then we have a graduate program where we keep the moms involved. The beautiful thing is a lot of the moms have started to mentor each other, and they have some social groups, and we really are able to improve quality of life, to improve parenting skills, and to help these folks find joy, and sometimes just to find a license and a car. I mean, even that works in that way as well. So there's a broad range of what we do with youth. I think you met Howard Smith, who works doing some mentoring with our middle school and high school students. And during that, he also teaches them some skills. How do you do yard work? They built a fence. How do you cook? Let's cook something and take it home to your family tonight for dinner. So we're really trying to bring that family piece in and watch these youth. Sadly, and I'll only mention information quickly, but we have uncovered through our juvenile review board and through other youth we are working with that there is a high incidence of youth sex trafficking in this area. Our connection and our closeness to the Massachusetts border and then to the casinos, we have seen some things that we had no idea were going on. We're working closely with DCF and Love 146, and we have a grant that allows us through the Eastern Connecticut Foundation that allows us to go out and teach a curriculum that we've been trained for to try to work on this. So again, grassroots, we uncovered something, we're working on it.
Let's talk very quickly as well about the Hand in Hand. You mentioned just briefly their new mums, new parents. It's an amazing program. Just encapsulate for us some of the stuff that you do.
So we had a funder approach us, oh gosh, probably 8-9 years ago now, and they wanted to be able to fully fund a program that would work on increasing the bond between parents and youth, increasing parenting skills, and bringing these folks close to the community so that they could receive some of the things that a community offers. Quick example is I used to take my own children to these wonderful library programs, and I'd get there, but everybody looked like me. And how do we have people feel comfortable bringing their children into these rich and wonderful social and teaching situations that are there for them, but they're not comfortable approaching? Our mentors work to do things like that. They stay with the mentor for the years until their child enters school, and the other goal is that that child enters school ready to enter school, ready to learn. We have found early on some children who have autism spectrum disorder, been able to address that early and connect them to other services in the community to really put our arms around that family and get that child ready for school, have that child arrive ready. So we've been able to do so much through this program. I know one of the things you were very interested in was the way that we attract people to the program is that we offer all the diapers they need until they don't need them anymore. And by then, we hope they're hooked and they're in. And we've found that to be true. A child in a wet or dirty diaper is an unhappy child, and that parent is trying to work with that child, and it just doesn't kick things off well. Diapers are very expensive. The diaper bank, which is, we also offer the diaper bank, that offers about a week's worth of diapers. This program offers diapers and wipes throughout that part of that child's life, and that's a huge, huge help to these parents in just keeping that baby warm, safe, and dry. Right?
Absolutely. Again, as we said, so many services, so little time, unfortunately, on this occasion to talk about them, but the food pantries is so important. We're seeing, unfortunately, you know, food pantries around the state really being pressed upon by the locals. Talk to us about yours, because again, you know, like all the food pantries are there and are so vital.
So vital, huge place where our volunteers come in to help. We have three pantries. We have and we call them markets. We did call them pantries, but we've changed. They all run on a swap, which is serving wellness at pantries. And the swap system offers green food on a shelf at eye level, yellow food that you choose sometimes at the next shelf, and then red food choose rarely. And we allow client choice in all of our markets. They walk through and choose what they need to satisfy their own dietary needs and preferences. We try to make our markets bright, cheery, welcoming. We offer social services at every market. There is a social worker there as people walk in asking what they need. What's the structure of your family? What are you facing? And what might help? How can we help? The markets, we are connected to the Connecticut Food Share. That connects us to Walmart, which brings 3 times a week, brings their fresh food, and they freeze meats for us as they start to go out of date. And so we have clean proteins. We have fresh fruits, vegetables. Our donors are very in tune with us, and they ask us what we need. We're able to serve a gluten-free diet, diabetic diets, diets of people with heart disease and high blood pressure. We're able to help folks to choose the best foods that they can use for that kind of a need.
And of course, senior services as well. Just talked to us briefly about senior services. Yep. Again, another huge part of the work that you do.
So we run a senior center in the town of Pomfret at their community center. Our market is in the basement of that. Our seniors, we know they're lonely. We know that loneliness is as bad as, I think they say, smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day or something. We really work on connecting and making that human touch. And I guess, Brian, I love walking around with folks and introducing them to Teague because it really makes me concentrate on what we do. But that human touch and that human connection is so important. Everything else follows that, right? So we find a senior who's been living alone. Maybe their house has been getting ahead of them. That becomes depressing. Start working with that senior, doing some visits, setting up some quality of life things for them, bringing them food. And then maybe next they say, gee, I just can't clean my yard up. We put some volunteers together. We have a program where we go over and do that, kind of make that fresh and clean. We do what we can. We do what we can. And sometimes it's connecting them with some medical help or getting the right visiting folks in there or saying, maybe this house is really ahead of you. Can we help you find a better situation? But we have a lot of seniors across the state of Connecticut still living in homes, still lonely, uncounted, and uncared for. And I would love to see that change even more before I leave.
Which leads me very nicely into my last question to you, because you dropped it into the interview and you said that you will be retiring, although you said you are staying in the area. So my question, and it's a tough one, is basically this: how difficult will it be for you to walk away from this?
It will be awful. It will be terrible. I will have 4 grandchildren by then in my area, in this area. I raised 3 children as a very busy mom, working days, nights, weekends at the school. And I decided that when I could retire, I would. I love the staff that I work with. 17 people do all this work, plus mentors who are per diem. I love the work that I do. I feel fulfilled every day. I am grateful every day. I hope to be able to continue with the connections that I've made to bring services to this area and to let the next person lead this organization, because I think a fresh look at an organization is a very good thing. It's a very valuable thing. And allowing that person to lead in their own way, I must do. So I will have to step away, but I have been given such a gift to do this work for the last 9 years.
Well, Anne Miller, current executive director of Teague, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you, as I say, for inviting us and explaining to us the work that you and your team do here. And it's a little bit premature, but we'll wish you a happy retirement for later this year.
Thank you, Brian.
And if you live in the quiet corner and need help or services, check out Teague's website to see if your town is served by them at Teague, that's T-E-E-G online or oneword.org. Connecticut East This Week is made possible by Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region. We're the region's federally designated economic development organization, providing businesses and municipalities with services and resources to make Southeastern Connecticut stronger and more vibrant. From small business financing to regional economic development strategy to business advising and support to government procurement assistance, we can help you grow. Find out more at sector, that's SECTER.org. And
when your home or business is damaged by fire, water, or mold, you just want things to go back to normal fast. That's why Service Master by Mason is available 24/7. Their certified technicians have been restoring homes and businesses from disasters or even helping with specialty cleaning needs for over 30 years. You can rely on Service Master by Mason for everything from fire, smoke, and water damage to mold or a lingering odor. Call today at 860-455-1249 or visit servicemasterbymason.com.
It's time for the quiet corner to make some noise. Some Day Kimball Health noise. Largest employer in our region kind of noise. Day Kimball Health serves more than 125,000 people. Offers cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology specialties. It's having the region's only comprehensive and accredited breast center kind of noise. We're nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health. Healthcare in motion.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. Students and faculty at Three Rivers Community College in Norwich held a protest recently to highlight the impact of a budget shortfall on services they pay for and depend on. Deba Khan Bureau is a professor at Three Rivers and said since Governor Lamont and the legislature created a consolidated college system in the state last year, that's when the problems started.
The legislators who stood by knowing that the consolidation was a farce. How do I know this? Many legislators have told us that the consolidation was a miscalculation, an oversight, but they were too indifferent, apathetic, or afraid to tell the governor. And now our students still ultimately and will suffer the consequences of this mismanaged bureaucratic system.
Students at the protest spoke of reduced library and cafeteria services, as well as broken computers and other basic amenities, not just at Three Rivers, but at all of the state's its community colleges. Alyssa Pace is a student from the town of Manchester and told the protesters these issues are happening there too.
It doesn't matter where you are in the state, what community college you are. All the problems that were listed here today, they exist on my campus. They exist on the campus closest to you. They exist everywhere. You know someone currently who's facing all these problems. We have our cafeteria hours were cut. Our library hours were cut. The money from our staff was cut. We don't have work study for a lot of our students as much as we need because of the budget cuts, all of it.
Community college students say they are being hit the hardest as many of them are first generation students from poorer backgrounds and rely on the state college system's lower education costs to help them afford higher education. A Connecticut bill would establish peer-run respite centres to help people with mental illness. Edwin J. Vieira from the Connecticut News Service reports.
SB 370 would establish 8 of these centres with 3 specific centres for transgender, Spanish, and BIPOC communities. Unlike inpatient hospitalization, these programs are voluntary and allow a person to come and go. Jordan Fairchild with Keep the Promise CT says hospitalization can disrupt a person's life.
If someone calls 988 and says the wrong thing, or if they say the wrong thing to a provider, they can end up having the police show up at their door, be taken to the hospital against their will, be thrown in a locked ward, possibly forced on medication.
She's heard of transgender people who've been hospitalized, had their HRT taken away, were called by their dead names, and had to sit in groups with people who harassed them. The bill garnered universal support during a public hearing last month, but opponents question how the state will pay for the program. For now, the bill has been referred to the Office of Legislative Research and the Office of Fiscal Analysis. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal announced millions in federal funding to fight tick-borne diseases such as Lyme, babesiosis, and powassan in the state. The Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station, based in New Haven, which monitors tick activity in the state, received $239,000 to continue and expand their work. Dr. Jason White is the director of the experiment station and said the station was unique in the nation in what it does.
And our motto is putting science to work for society, and our vector-borne disease program is really the perfect example of that. Our tick-borne disease research and surveillance program goes back many years, and over much of that time, there's really been no greater advocate for our work specifically or for the public health issues and concerns associated with tick-borne illness.
Cases of disease caused by ticks have more than doubled in the Northeast in the last 10 years. In 2023 in Connecticut, ticks submitted to the experiment station for testing, 26.5% tested positive for Lyme disease, 8.3% for babesiosis, and 2.4% for anaplasmosis. Blumenthal said the rise in tick rates and their movement northwards is troubling.
The collection of tick-borne diseases debilitate and even destroy lives in Connecticut and all around the country, and they are growing worse. We're in a battle with tick, and the ticks are threatening to win. Part of the reason is climate change. Ticks are moving northward. It's a pattern that has existed for a while. It's an alarming and deeply frightening pattern.
Blumenthal said that $26 million in this year's federal budget will go to the National Center for Emerging and Zoonotic Infectious Diseases, $5 million for the public-private partnership known as the LymeX Initiative, and $100 million for Lyme and tick-borne disease research to the Department of Health and Human Services. And Governor Lamont has announced his administration is awarding $35.5 million in state funding to nonprofit providers across the state. The money will be used for capital improvement projects that support each organization in their mission of delivering services to the state's most vulnerable. The grants are being released through the state's nonprofit grant program, which is administered by the Connecticut Office of Policy and Management. Established in 2013, the program has provided more than $130 million to the state's nonprofit organizations, supporting about 750 projects. Eastern Connecticut nonprofits in New London and Windham counties were among the 94 projects across the state to receive significant funding for their individual organizations. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.